Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi, I'm Rob from robnunphoto.com, and in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about, quite a few different things. The title of the podcast is Hello Chromecast. I'll talk a little bit about that. I'll talk a little bit about the MG5550 Canon printer I got recently, which I might have discussed on the last podcast, I'm not quite sure. I've downloaded Lightroom 5, and I've started playing with that, and I'll do some questions at the end. Now, if you happen to be watching this live on Google Plus or YouTube right now, I have also enabled the questions and answer app or widgets, which means that I think you can type questions into a box and they might pop up. So if you are watching live, then feel free to do this. Now, unfortunately, I don't do SEL to a strict timescale, and so It's a bit random, really. It just so happens that Suzanne and Oliver have gone to the gym, so I've got like a spare half an hour, so I've quickly plugged in my webcam, plugged in my headset, and I thought I had some notes, so I thought we'd go for it. So this is SEL 232. It's for the 23rd of March 2014, and thanks for downloading or watching on YouTube, or you could even be watching this live. So Canon MG5550. A few weeks ago, Oliver didn't really need a new printer. We needed a new printer because our old Epson, which we've had for probably 6 or 7 years now, was on its last legs. You couldn't get a colour print out of it. In fact, you couldn't really get a black print out of it. It's sort of printed in this off pink hue, but it done its work, and I thought, you know, it's time to really get another one. And printers are quite reasonably priced, and I had a budget of about £100, including paper and inks and things. So I went through Amazon, and also they had to be somewhere local that had it in stock. So after going through Amazon and everything, and it had to be a Canon one as well, I was a bit of a Canon fanboy. And while I was at Jessop's, we played around with quite a few for the cheaper Canon inkjet printers, and very impressed with the results that came out of them. The photos were on a par with the stuff we would get from our lab. So anyway, I decided on the MG5550, which is a 3-in-1, so it's a scanner and a copier as well. Mainly because it was fairly cheap. It was about £80, I think, I paid for it. Argos happened to have it in stock. And it got plenty of good reviews for picture quality. So I thought, brilliant, so we give it a go. So went down to Argos, bought this thing home, and it's pretty massive. There's a review on the YouTube channel where you can kind of see it in action. But I've been really very, very impressed indeed. The prints you get out of it, I've done 6x4s, 5x7s, and A4s, all on proper photo paper, and they're amazing. The colours are so good, the contrast is great, and it's a really nice printer. And it's kind of kicked me back into producing hard copies of what I do, because I've kind of slipped out of it doing many prints recently. And also, it's kind of reinvigorated, I think, all of our photos as well, because it's all right sharing photos on your screen, isn't it, and looking at them, but it's another thing entirely to look through your old photos of the kids and your family, or, you know, maybe landscapes and things you've done, and then sharing them, handing them around. And I've been very, really impressed with it. It's not cheap. In the review that I did on YouTube, I kind of worked out the costs for an A4 print, and I think they came out at about It was about £1.80, I think, for each A4 print, if you take into account the cost of the paper and the cost of the ink, and how many sort of sheets you get out of your average ink cartridge, which is slightly more expensive than ordering A4 prints online. But I think, you know, that's fair. I mean, it just means that the 6x4s and the 7x5s are pretty cheap to make. So, you know, you would do your proofing on your 6x4s or your 5x7s, and then when you want a nice big print, you then stick the A4 paper in. So, yeah, I've been very pleased with the MG5550, and I guess that probably goes for any of the Canon entry-level printers. Very, very good indeed. Really good photo quality you get out of them. I've still been playing with my HTC One Max Android smartphone that I picked up not that long ago, that the guys at HTC were kind enough to send me, and I have to say I've really fallen in love with the form factor. If you're ever in doubt about whether you would enjoy a large phone like the HTC One Max or the Galaxy Note 2 or Galaxy Note 3, or I think Sony do a bigger one, don't they, and LG do a bigger one as well, you know, don't worry about it. Although they can seem a bit hefty at first, once you get into them and you start to really enjoy the brightness and the ease of use of having a really big screen, I can't really go back to a smaller phone. They are a lot more awkward to use when it comes to taking photographs with them, because you've got this big, heavy, clunky thing, and it's difficult to do things with one hand. But for looking at photos and editing the photos once you've taken them, and generally consuming stuff on the internet, fantastic, a fantastic phone, really, really love it, HTC One Max, and kind of wouldn't go back to a smaller phone now. I mean, I say in that, I'm kind of within two minds, you know, whether, you know, you go for something big like the HTC One Max or a Galaxy Note, or you just go sod it and you go really small, like, I say really small, something like an iPhone, really. But for now, I think the form factor of the HTC One Max, the phablet, I just think it's fantastic. Real nice bit of kit. Now, over on the Flickr photo group, there's been an ongoing photo assignment on street photography for Amateur Photographer of the Year. Now, I know not that many people have put their photos into it. In fact, I think I'm probably the only one who did. And I would hate to think that people got put off thinking it was a competition, you know, that you had to enter Amateur Photographer of the Year. All it was really was that, if you haven't listened to last podcast, every year there's a British magazine called Amateur Photographer, and they run a competition, Amateur Photographer of the Year. And you can win, like, fantastic prizes. I think Olympus is sponsoring this year, so there's lots of prizes. And I thought this year, perhaps, well, I'm going to have a crack at it, you know. Even if it's only just to get me out there shooting different subjects. And so what I thought might be quite an idea would be for the SEL Photography Podcast / RobLandPhoto.com kind of Flickr group, would be for the monthly assignments. I know they've probably been every two or every 3 months, but to do monthly assignments again, and they would mirror what the APOI would be. Now, the good thing about Amateur Photographer of the Year is that it's open to anybody in the world as long as you're an amateur photographer. The only people who can't enter are professionals. So it doesn't matter if you're in America, if you're in Russia, if you're in Africa. Anyway, you can enter. Or all that means is if you were to win one of the rounds, one of the monthly rounds, or even the year thing, just means that you might have to pay customs, might have to pay duty on any prizes there that you would get to do it that way. So, the next one is, he says, having a look at his notes, the next one, which starts on the 5th of April officially, that, I guess that's when they'll put it on the website, and run to the 25th of April, is called Animal Planet. And so what you've got to do is take a photo, something to do with Animal Planet, like pets or wildlife, and then choose your best one, and then by the 25th of April, upload it to the amateur photographer. Well, what you do is you email it to them. But if you go to, I'll put a link on the show notes about all the rules. Now, the round two, Animal Planet, isn't live yet, so there's still time to submit a street photography photo as well, but I'll put a link to that one. And then the idea of our assignment in the Flickr group is that you can post photos in there, maybe not the photos you're going to submit to APOI, but maybe ones that are similar, or even if it's you don't want to enter, you just want to use the photo assignments as an excuse to go out and shoot something maybe that you did have wouldn't have done, then go for it. But I don't want anybody to feel pressured, you know, and not to take part, because you've got to take part in the Amateur Photographer of the Year competition. I mean, I'm not expecting to get anywhere, but you know, it's a little bit of fun. And the great thing about APOI is that it's free as well. There's so many photography competitions out there, you have to pay an entry fee, isn't there? And you kind of get the feeling that perhaps they're a bit of a money making deal for the people who are actually running it. Okay, so next up is speaking of the Amateur Photography of the Year competition, I thought I'd talk about my kind of feeble attempts at street photography. And I kind of did a couple of different little mini photo walks when I had the time. I did a photo walk down by Gosport Ferry, which was quite interesting, to say the least. I guess at heart I'm a little bit of a coward when it comes to street photography, because it is quite intimidating, because you kind of get it in your head, the fact that you're going to go down and you're going to do your best, and you're going to be like Henri Cartier-Bresson, and you're going to be taking lots of pictures. But then when you actually get there, you think, oh wait a minute, I don't know whether I can actually do this. I feel a little bit nervous. And that's how I felt, because you're there, you've got your DSLR camera out of the bag, and there's all these people around, and people are looking at you funny. But in the end, I thought, right, sod it, I'm here to do a job. You know, I pretended I was like a photographer for a newspaper, and my job today is to take street photos of people coming off the Gosport Ferry, which I did. None of them were particularly good, but the fact that I was there, all of these photos actually that I took on this little photo walk and the one I did past St Vincent, I think that I'm too far away from the subjects, and even if I was using a zoom lens, I get the feeling that I would be too far away. I mean, there is one particular photo that I quite like, which is looking up Gosport High Street, and it's of somebody who's walking away from the camera, and there's nobody around them, and they look quite dejected. Well, they look like they've had a hard day at work and they're on their way home. But I'm always a bit aware of the fact that I think that if you're doing street photography, people should be looking, maybe not into the camera, but they should be looking in the camera's direction. They should be looking into the photo. I think if all your street photos of people are walking away or looking away, it's a bit cowardice, isn't it? And I feel that with that photo. So I did that one, and then I thought, then I had another day off, so I thought, right, I'm going to do another one where I walk down Brockhurst Road. Because I've got one of my projects for 2014 is a lot of them are based around roads and places, and so I did that, and I walked along and tried to get some street photography there. But again with that one, a lot of it was I ended up taking photos of people across the road from me, you know, and I really felt that I wanted to be, you know, like Gary Winogrand style of street photos, where you're right in there amongst the people, clicking away with your Leica or your rangefinder, and using a wide angle lens, but you're really very close indeed. And they didn't really end up turning out like that, so I was a little bit disappointed. I did end up choosing one photo and uploading it, and we'll see, you know, whether people like it or not. I don't know, on Amateur Photography of the Year. If I don't get anywhere, I don't really care. At least I had a go, and it was interesting anyway. It got me doing something that I probably wouldn't be doing. Gosh, if you're watching this video on YouTube, you'll probably see that it's gone incredibly bright, because I was clever enough to play around with the settings on my webcam before I went into it, and I've managed to basically put it into manual exposure mode. And the problem with manual exposure mode is that all of a sudden it's gone incredibly bright, and that's really done in the exposure. There we go. I've put it back into automatic mode. The reason why I was doing this is, and I tell you what, if anybody out there has got a Logitech C920 webcam, I've had a few problems with it since I got it. I mean, it takes beautiful, beautiful images. But if you're running at high def, like 720 or 1080p, you definitely get lag between the audio and the video. And when I've recorded lots of video, after a few minutes, the lips and the video are out of sync. So that was a bit disappointing. But the way I got around it was by turning off all of the auto functions, making sure that I was recording lossless video and virtually lossless audio as well. That seems to have sorted it out. But today, when I was recording the podcast, I'm always trying to change my workflow when it comes to recording videos and podcasts, trying to make it easy so I can just set up and record, so I can do them more often. And so I've set up in our front room, just by the window, so I don't have to set up my light with my umbrella with the diffuser on. Because the problem as well is, when I set up my light with my diffuser with my umbrella, when I'm using a halogen light, it's not a very... although you can white balance it, sort of, and get it so it's not orange, I don't think halogen bulbs, they don't kick out the full spectrum. So even though you balance the light, it's still very flat. So I wanted more of a natural light. And I actually went out yesterday and bought, down the range, a natural light bulb, 100 watt bulb, just to use as kind of a fill. And I thought, I'll tell you what, for a quick thing, I'll set up in the front room, in the lounge, and I'll record the video there and the podcast there. And then I went through my normal thing of setting up the webcam, putting it on manual mode, and then all of a sudden, of course, the light changed, because I am relying on natural light, and then it blew out the video. So what I've done is I've flipped back to automatic control. So it should be interesting to see what happens. And I welcome feedback when you watch the videos on YouTube or Google+. You know, if you think the quality's rubbish, you know, say so, you know, and I'll do my best to improve it next time. So what's up next? Well, we were going to be looking at, he says, looking at his notes again. Oh yeah, this was something I wanted to tell you as well. We went to visit Valentino, the grandson, and Mel down in Hayward's Heath a few days ago, and I had what I thought was an error with my camera, when in fact it wasn't. And this might ring some bells with people who've had this before, or something to look out for people who haven't. So I had my Canon 600D with the 18-55 and the 55-250 IS lenses on it, and I was taking lots of pictures of Valentino as he was zooming around on his scooter, and he was whizzing backwards and forwards. And so what I did was, I did something which I don't normally do, which was I flicked the AF mode to servo, so it would track Valentino as he was moving around, and so we would be in focus when I took the pictures. So yeah, and it seemed to work great, fabulous. It would track him as he was coming towards me and everything. However, later on in the day, he was sitting on the settee, sitting on the couch, taking some photos, and I thought, right, I'll take some pictures of him. Went to use my camera, and I thought it was broken, because I wasn't getting the AF beep. You know, when you press the button halfway down on the shutter release, and it goes beep, and then you take the picture. It wasn't beeping. I thought, but the AF on my camera's broken. So I switched the AF to... it was hunting inside and out, and it seemed to be going into focus, but I wasn't getting a beep. So I thought, So I put the lenses into manual focus mode, and I was getting the beep. And I was like, oh, gosh. So I took the 18-55 lens off, put the 55-250, and it was doing the same thing. I thought, no, my camera body's broken. The autofocus has broken. So I was like, a bit gutted. I was like, Then all of a sudden, I thought, well, I'll tell you what, why don't I look through all the settings and make sure I haven't set anything up. And then I went through the white checklist, which is, you know, you check your white balance, you set your ISO, you check your focus. And at that point, I realised I was still in servo focus mode. And in servo focus mode on the 600D, when you press the shutter button halfway down, it does lock focus, but it doesn't beep to tell you it does. It just then tracks your subject. So as soon as I put the autofocus mode back to single point, normal sort of thing, beep, it came back, and I breathed a sigh of relief. So if you're ever out there and you think your autofocus is broken, just check you're not in servo mode, because you might find that you are. Right, Google Chromecast. I tell you what, there's not many times that I'm pretty close to getting an exclusive on something, but I've been kind of been looking out for the Google Chromecast for quite a while now, because I know it's been released in the States for a long time, and it's something that kind of appeals to me, because it's basically a streaming media dongle, and ever since we've gone with the Virgin high-speed broadband, you know, now we've got like Netflix, we've got the Wii streaming video, we've got a Roku box upstairs. I'm kind of into this, and I guess what's really appeals to me as well is the fact that it's only £30, which, you know, is nothing. A Roku box is £80, £100, and so it came out in the UK about 2 days ago. So I've zipped down to Currys or PC World, one of the two, and picked one up. And I tell you what, it is brilliant. If you haven't got one already, and you've got a spare HDMI port in any of your tellies, get at least one. I think when we get paid, I'm probably going to get another one for our HDTV upstairs. Basically, it enables you to cast, they call it, but it enables you to put anything that's on your laptop or your computer onto your television screen. Okay? So let's say you're watching a YouTube video, you can click the Chromecast button and bink, it appears on your TV, which is really cool, isn't it? If you want to look at a web page, it will put the whole web page up on your TV. And I never really knew this, but if you open up a new browser in Chrome on your laptop or your computer, if you type Control O, you can then open files. And so what you do is, if you then open a movie file, so say something you've downloaded or you've ripped onto your computer, that Chrome, the web browser, will then play that, and then you can transmit that straight to your TV. Okay, now also things like in the UK we have things like ITV Player and Channel 4 Player, which are sort of TV catch-up services, but there isn't an app for them on the Roku or the Nintendo Wii or anything. But because you can transmit a whole tab from your browser, you can watch ITV Player on your TV. So this is really good stuff. And also, it will also transmit your whole desktop view. So whatever you're looking at on your computer, it will throw that across to your TV. So it's like a super HDMI wireless lead at its most basic, but it's also superb for watching Netflix and YouTube and BBC iPlayer at HD, and I've been very, very impressed indeed. Now, I think you've got to have a pretty fast internet connection for it to work properly, and I think what happens is the Chromecast kind of creates its own little Wi-Fi network that everybody logs onto, but it's very easy, incredibly easy to set up, and yeah, very, very impressed indeed. So impressed that I'm definitely going to buy more and have them plugged into the back of as many TVs as we've got. I mean, we've just put a little television that we've had up in the loft in the kitchen, so Suzanne or I could watch it while we're cooking. And it's got a HDMI lead. But that would be perfect, because you say you're doing a recipe and you want to look at it on YouTube, all you do is, like, on your phone, you're on YouTube and you just hit the cast button, and it'll ask you which Chromecast you want to send the video to. And it's not really sending it, it's just giving it the URL to download it. And that would work. I mean, how cool is that? So, really cheap, works really well. If you've got a fast internet connection and a spare HDMI port, buy one. I mean, for £30, it's worth playing around with, and I'm damn sure you're going to enjoy it. And you're probably going to end up buying more, like I'm going to. Lightroom 5, yes. So it's, you know, people may question me, because if you ask me, what do I shoot in and what do I edit with, I'm quite basic in the fact that, you know, I shoot in JPEG, and I edit my photos mostly in Google's free Picasa editing software. I shoot JPEGs because they're fairly small, they're fairly fast. I think with SLRs and with most compact cameras, the JPEGs you get are pretty damn good anyway. They really are fantastic quality, and the cameras are very, very good to get the exposure correct. And I think that sometimes shooting with RAW, you're just introducing another level of making something a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. But I can understand why people shoot with RAW if you're professional, or, you know, you want that extra detail. And I like Picasa because it's free. It's very, very fast. You can run Picasa on a old laptop or an old desktop and it will run fine. And Picasa's great because it helps you organise your photos. It's got things like facial recognition, tagging, geotagging, all this sort of stuff. And it has some really good basic editing things on it. You can do 99% of the stuff you want to do with a photo in Picasa. And but if you need to do things, some things like specific cloning out of large areas, then I would then do a round trip into Photoshop CS3, I think I've got, or CS2, or HDRs in Photomatics. Or if I wanted to use, say, Nick Silver FX Pro, I would then go to Photoshop. But I'm well aware that lots of people who probably listen to this podcast or watch the videos on YouTube, lots of you guys and girls probably use Lightroom. And although lots of people have kind of poo-pooed the fact that you can subscribe to Adobe to get a copy of Lightroom and a copy of Photoshop. They've got this like amazing deal on at the moment. I think it's pretty amazing, where you can get Lightroom and Photoshop together for £8.78 a month. That's in the UK, and I think it's $9.99 in America. So you can have the latest version of Lightroom and the latest version of Photoshop on your laptop for £8.78 a month. And you might, I know over time that adds up and you could just buy Lightroom, but Photoshop is well expensive, isn't it? It's about £600-£700 to actually buy it, or it used to be when you could buy it. And I think for £8.78 that's really, really good. And I know there's all the arguments about the fact that, well, what happens when they increase the price, or, you know, they update the software and your computer's too slow to run it properly and all this sort of stuff. But I thought for £8.78 a month, it's worth giving it a go. Plus, Adobe do free 30-day trials. So I'm going to, at the moment I'm doing the free 30-day trial of Lightroom, giving it a go just to see how I get on with it. And I think I'll probably use it in addition to Picasa. And I mean, if I do go for it, obviously I'll be using the latest version of Photoshop as well, as long as it doesn't bog down my basic laptop too much. But my initial impressions are is that it seems pretty good. It's very, very, it's like a slower, more complicated version of Picasa. And I guess Lightroom users out there are probably going, what's he talking about? But honestly, if you haven't tried Picasa already, download it and give it a go. You'll probably be very impressed about what it can do and how fast it works as well. But I've been scouring the internet on hints and tips on how to speed Picasa up, speed Lightroom 5 up. So with things like creating one-to-one previews, doing solo mode on the panels, all these sorts of things. And it seems to be speeding up pretty well. And the editing options seem pretty good as well. It seems you can you make your photos pop a lot easier in Lightroom. But then again, you also got the problem that you can always go too far as well. And I like the fact that it's got quite a few black and white options for converting. And you can always round trip into Photoshop. Or luckily enough, I've still got my old download of SilverFX Pro from version 1 from years ago. That, you know, SilverFX Pro, I think, is one of the best black and white converting softwares around, and that actually came with a Lightroom plugin, and that still works as well. It's a round tripper, so what happens is it exports the photo to it, you do your stuff on, then you go back to Lightroom and it's kind of permanently baked in. But that looks really good, so I'm looking forward to playing with Lightroom over the next month or so. And then after 30 days, if I really like it, then I'll go for it and I'll become a subscriber and then get Photoshop downloaded as well. But also what that will mean is that I'll be able to hopefully do some good videos for people if you're a little bit unsure about some of the features. And I think I'll probably do videos like Lightroom for the Picasa photographer. So, you know, so if you're used to Picasa and you're thinking about dipping your toe into the Adobe world, then I'll do, you know, the things you should look at, the things that are different, how you organise your files, where things are is probably the biggest thing. So if anybody out there has got some hints and tips actually on Lightroom and how to use it and a good workflow as well for editing your photos and good settings, then, you know, by all means email me, scalesbridge@gmail.com. I'd really appreciate some help, and that would go a long way indeed. Now, just got a few questions just to finish off the podcast. The first one is from Eunice Juni, and it's in relation to the Zorky 4K rangefinder. And she says, how do you set the film speed on the Zorky 4K rangefinder, 35mm film camera? Well, the answer to that, Eunice, is that you don't. It's a fully manual camera, so there's no need for it to have a film speed. What you do is you use a light meter with it, and you put the film speed into your light meter. You measure the light, that will then tell you your aperture and your shutter speed. You wind the Zorky on, remember, never change the shutter speed without it being wound on, and then you take your picture. Or if you don't have a light meter, you can always use the Sunny 16 rule. And so with the Sunny 16 rule, it's very simple. All you do is you know your film speed. So let's say your film speed is 400. If you're out and about on a sunny day in direct sunlight, then your setting will be 1 over your film speed. So your shutter speed will be a 400th of a second, or as near to that as you can get. And your aperture will be f16. And then all you do, if it's a little bit darker, you go to f8, say it's a little bit cloudy, or let's say it's really cloudy, then you might go to f4, or you could start doubling your film speed, and or if it got even brighter, you know, say you were on a by a white wall or something like that, then, you know, you could adjust it the other way as well. So that's nice and easy. And then in relation to Rudd putting M42 lenses on a Canon DSLR, Robo Cian says, can you link to your adapter? Oh, right, because I did a video on it. I got it years ago, so I couldn't tell you which one it was now, but if you just search eBay for an M42 adapter, M42 EF adapter, there's loads on there. I just wouldn't bother with any of the ones with AF confirm on. And then BMJ asks, Rob, my Kokin set looks like yours, but is the P series. My circular polarized filter with the ridged edges like yours won't fit. Does this mean these are only made for the A lenses, A series? My polarizer has no markings on it. I only came in the dark square plastic box. Not sure whose make it is, but looks like yours. Any advice on what to do? Well, I mean, Kokin did, or do, I don't know if they still make them or not, they did the P and the A series systems. The A for the smaller lenses and the P for the big professional lenses. And as far as I'm aware, there isn't an adapter for you to use either on or. But, I mean, if you go on eBay, there's lots of, you know, if you've got a P system, like a P holder and other P filters, then there's P polarizers on there. Remember, go for a circular polarizer. But saying that, on my old Kokin A system, I had a linear polarizer, and that seemed to work okay. But sometimes it can mess around with the focusing or the exposure in your camera. Or similarly, if you've got a P polarizer, then buy a P bracket, or if you've got a P bracket, buy a P polarizer, if you want to. They're great things to play around with, and they're a real cheap way of getting into polarizers and graduated filters, where you can do everything in camera rather than on the outside as well. So you haven't checked out Kokin filters. Often a good place to find them is if you're down the car boot sale and there's some old camera bags. There were some old cameras. You might not want the cameras, but you might want some of the accessories, because loads of people used to buy Kokin stuff because they used to do the graduated filters so you could darken the sky easier. So there we go. So thanks for those questions. They're really good. Remember, you can email me scalespeeder@gmail.com or put the questions in comments underneath the videos on YouTube or on the website as well. Well, that's it from me. Thanks to everybody for taking part in the Flickr photo group and putting their photos in there. Remember, it's free to join. There's some great work in there. I find it inspirational every time I visit. Thanks everybody for commenting on the blog over at robinofphoto.com. So just go have a quick drink. Thank you very much for everybody who's put in reviews on iTunes. If you've got a spare 5 minutes, open up iTunes, find the SEL Photography Podcast and put a few words on it, or, you know, put some stars on it. That would be fantastic. Or if you use any other software as well, that you Android systems. I don't know if we're on Stitcher at the moment. I think we're on Stitcher for the desktop, but I don't think we're on, I can find us on mobile Stitcher. But if you see us, if you find us with whatever aggregator you do, if there's a way of adding a review or adding some stars or a thumbs up or something, please add them. It really does help to get more listeners. And the more listeners and readers and viewers I have, it gives me more clout with manufacturers to get stuff to review, to talk about. So, for example, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, over the next couple of weeks, I may be getting some some stuff for colour management off a well-known colour management software, because colour photography is definitely not my strong point. You might argue that black and white isn't either, but I struggle with colour. I tend to either go too far and make the colours all unrealistic, like in HDRs kind of thing, or I don't go far enough and they look washed out. And if you want to make your photos, your colour photos, really, really pop, one of the best ways to do it is to make sure your colour, especially things like skin tone, is spot on. And so hopefully I'll be getting some kit to play around with, so I can then talk about it and tell you guys and girls which is the stuff that's worth spending your money on. And the reason I can do that is because when I go to these companies and ask them for stuff, or they contact me, I can say, well, look, I've got this many thousand subscribers, I've got this many views on YouTube, I've got this many people look at my stuff, you know, if you send me some stuff and I talk about it, then people are going to know more about your product. So thanks to everybody for getting involved in all the different aspects of SEL and robinhubphoto.com. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music that you listen to on the podcast, not on the YouTube stuff though. And I guess thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robinhubphoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.